Australia did not figure in the Nobels this year, and some say the quality of our university research is beginning to fade. Last week, Professor Mark Dodgson discussed the role of philanthropy here, making up partially for the diminishing support from Canberra. Here's more.
On the question of its effects, universities usually welcome philanthropy with open arms, and they have had a long history of doing so. Harvard began its first fundraising campaign in 1643. Philanthropic giving has boosted university research, improved the experiences of students, and financed new buildings and facilities. It matters to universities for its qualities as much as its amount. Decisions about donations can be made quickly, and their objectives can be adventurous and risky. They can create far more impact than the actual amounts involved might imply. Philanthropy, and particularly the investment from Chuck Feeney's Atlantic Philanthropies and the way they were cleverly leveraged, fundamentally transformed my university, University of Queensland, by massively increasing its research profile. A common refrain in universities is the lack of funding for speculative, high-risk research. Government funding agencies can be conservative, shying away from adventurous methodologies and preferring to support those with proven track records. Philanthropically supported research can overcome some of these shortcomings, and it is more likely to fund the ideas of younger, less well-established researchers. Challenging questions abound, however. Where do you draw the line on who you should accept money from? In 2010, the London School of Economics accepted a donation from the Gaddafi Foundation at a time when the Libyan leader's son was alleged to have been awarded a PhD that was ghostwritten and contained plagiarism. The LSE came under increased public scrutiny during the Libyan uprising, leading to the resignation of its director. Years ago, as a professor at the ANU, I remember an almighty row about whether a gift was acceptable from a controversial Japanese philanthropist. His offer was rejected by the ANU, but accepted by Oxford and Cambridge. I also recall the furore during a period of sabbatical at Oxford over the naming of the university's business school and its building. There were questions about the business dealings of the donor. Oxford pragmatically accepted the money, perhaps reflecting the views of a previous president of Harvard when he said it was his obligation to take ill-gotten gains and put them to good use. It is clear that philanthropy will become more significant than ever, and these and many other issues surrounding it will need to be addressed. The ambitions of universities to create new knowledge and skills for a better future exceed the ability of governments and students to pay for them. Complementary and alternative sources of funding are needed, and philanthropy is becoming an increasingly important source of support. Most universities have methods of one sort or another to attract donations from alumni, especially very wealthy ones. They have professional staff working in development offices mounting campaigns. They're becoming much more successful at attracting benefactions, carrying out due diligence, and managing large gifts. This is to be welcomed, but universities need to ensure that private giving does not come with strings attached that redirect their purpose and objectives. The challenge lies in ensuring that philanthropy does not distort university missions and practices. Long-time horizons, integrity, independence, and serving the public good must always supersede the intent of any individual donor, no matter how generous. Universities crucially have to maintain their freedom to decide priorities and publish the results of their work, appoint and promote staff, and allocate intellectual property. Strong partnerships with ambitious philanthropists can be transformative for universities. But they have to proceed with discernment, prudence, and vigilance. Philanthropists can be driven by very particular agendas that may not accord with the goals and objectives of the university and their communities. There has to be complete transparency and employee engagement in determining the need for and source of benefactions. Universities should address problems that are large, important, and controversial, and philanthropy fits the bill in helping them do so. Much more thought needs to be directed to philanthropy as a topic of research, and given its importance for university, much more attention paid to the way that it can affect the nature and future of the university itself.
Thank you, Mark Dodgson, University of Queensland. Just a couple of questions. Do we have sufficient number in Australia? Because I remember when I was president of the Australian Museum Trust, you'd always end up in the same queue of people outside the boardroom door. Philanthropists could just pick you off and say, oh, well, I fancy that one, but not the other one. And it was rather a random thing, and there wasn't, frankly, enough gold to go around.
Well, we certainly don't have the developed philanthropy sector that other countries have, especially the United States, but also in Europe, where there's a long tradition of philanthropy supporting universities in countries like Germany, for example. I think the situation is improving, and certainly the professionalism within universities in being able to attract and manage effectively donations from individuals and from foundations is improving substantially, but we're still a long way behind. There's still an attitude amongst wealthy people and large corporations that they've already paid their taxes, why should they pay twice? Now, that's something that is changing, but I think needs to change much more.
And then it comes to, well, you call them the Koch brothers. I think sometimes they call them the Koch brothers, who are in fossil fuels and such like. And I think the last time I looked up their wealth, it was £185 billion. This is a gigantic sum. And of course, they were feeding money into things like the Tea Party people and the right-wing areas. Wealth on that scale rivals some nations. And are they distorting perhaps the way that innovation works?
Well, I was very impressed and disturbed by Jane Mayer's book called Dark Money, where she tracks the very long-term strategies of philanthropists like the Koch or Koch brothers, who for decades have been using their money very strategically through institutes they fund, such as the Cato Institute, and through funding chairs and departments in universities, and doing things like insisting on certain books are part of the curricula in the first year of economics degrees, which elevate free market thinking and so on. So they have been systematic and strategic, and it is a source of concern the way that they have managed to distort much of the debate. Although, of course, now they are in some dispute with Donald Trump, the man that they initially failed to support, but ended up, like many of these Republicans, being wholeheartedly supportive when he actually reached the White House. But they have begun to fall out over the questions of Trump's attitude to free trade. So it has conflicted with their ultra-libertarian views. But generally, there's some very, very good outcomes from some of the extreme wealth created from much of the entrepreneurship we've seen in Silicon Valley and Wall Street. We do see new forms of science being supported, and supported in a very different way, getting away from some of the slow decision-making of government departments and grant-giving bodies, more prepared to support more risky research. So there's good and there's bad, and I think that's one of the reasons why I think there needs to be an awful lot more research and an awful lot more public discussion about what impact philanthropy is having, particularly on public goods and the kind of research that's being undertaken in universities.
Professor Mark Dodgson from the University of Queensland Business School, and I see the Koch brothers are down to $150 billion last year, but they struggle on, second richest in the world.